Sitting beside the sheriff at the dance, Andy tapped his foot to the rhythm of the music. He had heard better fiddlers, but he had heard worse, too. The wooden floor creaked under the weight of dancers, some gliding with grace, some sliding awkwardly across the boards. Seymour's feet were still. He didn't seem to enjoy the music. He was here out of duty, not by choice. And he learned that the sheriff had been widowed for many years. Editor Tolliver came up and stood beside Andy.
There are several nice-looking ladies whose husbands are too busy drinking to pay attention to them. They'd be glad to dance with you.
They changed their minds when we got out on the floor.
Do you have a wife?
Yes, and I wish she was here.
If Andy had Bethel in his arms, it would make no difference that he danced with the grace of a wounded buffalo.
I am a bachelor myself. Sometimes that offers advantages.
Tolliver was soon whirling a young matron across the floor. Deputy Willis checked weapons at the door, though only a few men appeared to have brought any. So far as Andy could tell, these people were interested only in having a good time. Judge Zachary appeared in his crumpled white suit. Willis greeted him a little too warmly, as if trying to curry favor. The judge responded in a dignified but non-committal manner. Some men absented themselves for a while, then returned with a glow in their eyes and less sureness in their step. As they passed, Andy caught the strong aroma of whiskey. Lanny Teal danced by him often, always with the same girl. She was a little thing, thin enough to be picked up by the wind and blown away. Her shiny brown hair, done up in curls, sparkled with tiny glass ornaments meant to imitate diamonds. Her eyes seemed to see no one except Lanny, and he appeared to be aware of no one but her. Seymour nudged Andy.
Well, there's a storm brewing up.
Standing against the far wall were two young men Andy saw earlier on the sidewalk. They conversed with a youth he recognized as Jake McIntosh. Jake glared at Lanny and the girl, though they seemed unaware of him. They were too absorbed in each other. The three young men walked outside together.
Maybe they're leaving.
And they've just gone for a drink. They'll come back braver than when they left.
In a while, the three returned, Jake in the lead. His unsteady gait told Andy he was bent on trouble. He walked out onto the floor and gave Lanny an unfriendly slap on the shoulder.
I'm cutting in. You danced with Lucy long enough.
I'm the one who brung her, and I'll dance with her all night if I want to.
The crowd drew away in alarm as Jake drove a fist against Lanny's jaw. Lanny's head snapped back, but he was stunned for only a moment. His right fist came up from the floor and slammed into Jake's face. As Jake staggered, his two friends rushed in and began to pummel Lanny. While trying to shake them off, Lanny kept hitting Jake. Seymour jumped to his feet.
We better stop this before it turns into a free-for-all.
The judge stepped out onto the floor, waving his arms.
Gentlemen! Gentlemen, let's have order!
Andy saw that the crowd had mixed allegiances, some cheering for Jake, others for Lanny. He stepped between the fighters, grabbing the collars of the two who had joined the fray uninvited. He yanked them backward so hard that one stumbled and went down. The other struggled to keep his feet. Harold Percy looked up from his knees.
This ain't ranger business!
Andy jerked him to his feet.
You'll get your chance, but one at a time.
Harold, Sonny, this is a private fight. Back off and wait your turn.
It was Lanny's fight all the way. In no time, Jake was curled up on the floor, his arms folded over his face to ward off Lanny's fists.
Enough! Enough!
Lanny stepped back, red face glistening with sweat, one shirt sleeve split past the elbow. Andy turned to the two young men.
Which one of you wants to be next?
Neither appeared ready to face Lanny's fists alone. Both stood with heads down, humiliated in front of the crowd.
You young gentlemen should be ashamed. If charges are filed against you, I promise you that you will not enjoy your day in court.
Mason Gaines stepped forward, carelessly flipping a half-smoked cigarette across the dance floor.
You are arresting them, aren't you, Ranger?
Andy gripped Percy's collar and shook him soundly.
I was studying on it, but it looks like they lost interest in fighting.
You said all you needed was to see them break the law.
The boys got excited when they saw their friend getting his plow cleaned. I'll bet they'll know better next time.
Gaines made no secret of his disappointment.
Maybe you'll do something when these ruffians kill somebody.
Andy wondered why Gaines displayed such an interest in these young men. He suspected they had done something in the past that irritated him. Gaines appeared to be a man easily irritated. Andy looked to the sheriff.
Well, there wasn't any real harm done except to Jake, and he asked for it. As long as they'll all leave town right now, I'll forget this happened.
He shifted his attention to Lanny.
That goes for you, too.
I need to take Lucy home first.
I'll see that she gets home. I want you to leave right now. Get your wagon and travel.
He looked at Jake, whose face was beginning to darken with bruises and abrasions.
All right, I'm going. Evening's lost its flavor anyhow.
Silently, Andy and Seymour followed Lanny to the wagon yard where he had left the grocery-laden wagon and his team. Scanlon, owner of the yard, stepped out of his office.
Leaving already? I can still hear the music.
It took on a sour note.
The three men helped Lanny hitch up the horses and climb shakily into the wagon.
Now go straight home, Lanny. I'll say goodbye to the girl for you.
The dance ain't even over.
It is for you.
All I done was defend myself.
Andy suppressed a grin.
Good job it was, too.
Jake didn't get half of what he's got coming to him.
How'd you learn to fight like that?
It comes natural, being a Teal. With everybody picking on us, we get lots of practice. Giddy up!
Lanny snapped the reins and started the wagon rolling. Andy and Seymour followed afoot until satisfied that Lanny had chosen the road that would take him home.
Boy's got spirit.
I'd be better satisfied if he had less of it. It could get him killed one of these days. Him or somebody else.
Returning to the dance, they found the crowd diminished by half. The fight had put a chill over the festivities. Lucy was gone.
Looks like the trouble's over for tonight.
I don't know. Lanny's got two brothers and several friends. Have you ever got yourself tangled up with a feud?
Andy's face furrowed as he remembered.
A bad one once, down on the border. The graveyards got some bigger before it broke up.
Yeah, ever since my wife died, I've hated funerals. I do what I can to see that they don't get too numerous.
Andy accepted the sheriff's offer to sleep in an empty cell and save a little money. Up from his hard cot at daybreak, he ordered breakfast at a chili joint so small that a dozen customers would have been three too many. His steak was thick, however, drowned in grease and flour gravy and sided by a generous helping of scrambled eggs. The coffee was strong enough to walk by itself. That was the way Andy liked it. The cook proprietor was a stoop-shouldered man named Kennison. He was somewhere on the sunny side of 60, his thick gray hair needing a comb, his flour sack apron in need of soap and water. A talkative sort, he didn't require much prompting before he launched into a full history of the town and much of the country around it. Andy suspected that his account might be taking a few liberties with the facts.
Hey, what did you think about the fight last night?
It could have led to worse.
Oh, those boys are slow learners, jumping on Lanny Teal the way they do. He winds their clock every time they try.
They seem to have it in for him.
For him and all his kin. The Teals are tight with their money and have more of it than most of us around here. It's human nature not to like somebody who's got more money than you have.
Wouldn't the same feeling apply against the McIntoshes, too?
Oh, sure. There's lots of people who'd like to get hold of their land. The Teals and the McIntoshes don't have legal title, except for a little that's on live water. They just got six-shooter possession of the rest.
The state will sell it out from under them sooner or later.
Yeah, they're like politicians who can't see past the next election. One day they'll turn their calendar and find there ain't another sheet.
Deputy Willis burst into the little restaurant.
Pete Seymour sent me to look for you, Ranger. Says you need to go over to the doctor's house.
Do you know what for?
Somebody brought in Lanny Teal. Looked like a herd of cattle ran over him.
Andy recognized Lanny's wagon in front of the doctor's home. The groceries bought yesterday still lay in it, badly scattered. The sheriff met Andy at the door.
Hey, take a look at what somebody brought in.
Lanny sat slumped in a chair, his clothing torn, his face streaked with blood. He appeared to be in a daze, his cheekbones bruised blue and eyes swollen almost shut. A man in farmer overalls turned to the ranger.
I seen the wagon and team first standing there in the trail. Then I found this boy laying on the ground. Thought at first he was dead. Somebody worked him over like they meant to kill him.
Must have been several of them. One or two couldn't have done this to him. Not him or any of the other Teals.
Lanny struggled to get up. The doctor pressed him back into the chair. Be still, son. You're badly hurt. He had stripped Lanny to the waist. He washed the lacerated face and bruised body with alcohol. Lanny drew himself into a tight knot until the burning eased. The doctor applied a thick ointment to the deep scratches and open wounds.
Lanny, tell us who did this.
Lanny shook his head.
Who said somebody did anything? I just fell out of the wagon.
We know better than that. Tell us who did it.
I pay off my own debts. I don't need no squinchy-eyed sheriff.
I can lock him up and throw the key in the river.
In jail, they get free room and board, with nothing to do but sleep. Damn poor punishment the way I see it.
Which is much as the law allows.
The law? Nobody by the name of Teal ever gets a fair shake from the law.
If you try to handle this yourself, you'll wind up in bad trouble.
I've been in trouble most of my life. Don't scare me none.
Lanny looked at the doctor, or tried to.
Hurry up and finish with me, Doc. I want to go home.
Your eyes are swollen. I doubt that you could even see the road.
The horses know the way.
I'll go with you. Otherwise, that bunch might catch you traveling alone and do this all over again.
I'll borrow a gun. It'll be them that needs help.
With those eyes swollen, you couldn't see well enough to shoot anybody.
They're cowards. Maybe I can scare them to death.
That'll be my job.
Andy drove the wagon, his horse tied on behind. Lanny sat rigidly. Each jolt of the wagon drew his mouth into a tight, thin line, but he didn't complain. Old man Teal had brought his sons up to be tough as a hickory knot.
We'd better stop and rest the horses a while.
Lanny offered no argument.
Whoa!
He climbed down slowly and painfully, waving off Andy's move to help him.
As long as I got 2 feet under me, I'll do it for myself. You can carry me when I'm in my coffin.
That may be sooner than you think if you keep fighting all the time.
Us Teals never set out to aggravate anybody. All we asked for is to be left the hell alone.
About noon, Andy became aware of several riders coming up behind. Spotting the wagon, they moved their horses into an easy lope. Andy drew his pistol and conspicuously held it across his lap. It did not go unnoticed. The riders were young men. They included Percy and Vernon, who had jumped on Lanny at the dance. Andy didn't see Jake McIntosh. He had probably gone home to nurse his bumps and bruises. Percy gave Andy a hostile look.
Have you taken sides, Ranger?
Who would I side with? I haven't seen a halo hanging over anybody since I've been here.
We heard Lanny fell out of his wagon and hurt himself. We came out to see that he gets home all right.
Andy raised the pistol to be certain no one had forgotten about it.
You all can go back to town. I've got the situation well in hand.
We'll go along and help you.
Andy was sure they would jump him the first time they saw a chance.
Now, boys, I want to be sure we understand one another. See that cow skull lying out yonder?
He leveled the pistol and put a bullet between the eyes. The skull shattered in a puff of dust. Andy gave the surprised young men a moment to consider.
Told you got the situation handled.
An old cow skull is one thing. Shooting a man is different.
It is. A man is bigger and easier to hit.
Some of the men lost interest after the shot. They were starting to turn away. Percy's resentful gaze followed them. Percy slumped in the saddle.
We could get you fired. We've got friends in Austin.
So have I.
By this time, most of the riders had pulled back. They knew that to hurt a ranger was dangerous business. To kill one was suicide.
I'll get a Mexican curandero to put a curse on Lanny Teal. And on the rangers, too.
Andy watched him turn and follow the others toward town.
I think the horses have rested enough.
The shot had taken Lanny by surprise.
I'd hate to have you aim that six-shooter at me.
I'd hate to have to.
They reached the Teal's ranch a little before sundown. Bud, the oldest brother, came down from the porch as Andy stopped the wagon in front of the house. He frowned at Lanny.
Damn it, boy, you look like you took on the Union Army and lost.
I won the first fight. If this ranger hadn't broken it up, I'd have whipped Jake McIntosh to where he'd been in bed for a week.
What do you mean, the first fight?
Some of his friends followed me when I started home. They came at me in a bunch.
Which of Jake's friends?
Lanny realized he'd said more than he intended.
I was talking to Bud.
Daggett limped out onto the porch, followed by Carrie. For a moment, her eyes betrayed anxiety over her battered brother. She got hold of her emotions.
Did you bring everything I asked you to?
It's all there. Look for yourself.
She touched a bandage on Lanny's face. Her voice softened.
How does Jake McIntosh look?
Kinda beat up.
Harper Teal stepped onto the porch in time to hear, his reddish eyebrows meeting each other in a scowl.
I've told you boys over and over, I disapprove of you fighting.
He moved down for a closer look at his son.
But if you can't go around it, be damn sure you win. Did you?
Lanny loosened up.
Sure did. Whipped him fair and square, Pa. On the way home, they ganged up on me. But I think I put a hurt on a couple of them.
Harper nodded with satisfaction.
Always remember, never go looking for trouble. But if it comes, don't let nobody tread on you.
Carrie fixed an accusing gaze on Andy.
Where was the law when the McIntosh bunch was trying to beat him to death?
Asleep, I'm afraid. After the fight at the dance, Sheriff Seymour and I made sure Lanny took the road home. We didn't think Jake was in any shape to follow him.
Angrily, she turned to her father.
We've got to put a stop to this trouble or people are going to die. Some of us, maybe.
It's up to Ethan McIntosh and his brood. That damned old Yankee's got his mind set on running the whole county.
Listen to yourself throwing out the word Yankee. The war's been over for more than 20 years.
Not everywhere. We're still standing up for the little people.
Carrie braced her hands on her hips.
We're all little people, even the McIntoshes and their kin. Compared to the big ranches, none of us amounts to a hill of beans.
And we never will, unless we fight for what's ours.
The old man tromped back into the house.
Come on in, Lanny, and let me check you over.
The doctor patched me up fine.
I said come in this house!
Lanny gingerly stepped down from the wagon and slowly followed her into the house. His shoulders drooped.
I pity her next husband. He'd better have a hide like that old brindle bull.
She have any prospects?
Bud glanced up at Daggett.
Well, everybody around here knows her too well. They know the red in her hair ain't just for looks.
Bud pointed his chin toward the bunkhouse.
Yeah, you'll stay all night, won't you, Ranger?
It's too late to go back to town.
Don't expect too good a supper. The mood carries in, she'll burn the biscuits and oversalt the beans.
Daggett remained standing on the porch, leaning on his cane, observing the scene without comment. When Bud went into the house to see about his brother, Andy looked at him.
How's the leg?
Healing. Thought you went to town to keep the peace.
I'm afraid I didn't do a good job of it.
Yeah, well, next time knock some heads together. You'd be surprised how sensible people get when they see a little blood, especially if it's their own.
You can do it yourself when you're ready to ride.
Daggett seated himself on the bench.
I kind of hate to leave. Like the cooking.
Or maybe the cook?
Well, she grows on you.
At the table, Andy found the Teal family in better spirits than he might have expected in view of the beating Lanny took. The patriarch didn't bellow at anyone, and Carrie's biscuits were just right.
Pass me the gravy, Lanny, and tell me again how you whooped Jake McIntosh.
Wasn't much to it, Pa. Me and Lucy was dancing along right fine till he come in drunk, itching for a fight, so I gave it to him. Then a couple of Jake's friends messed in.
Carrie glanced at Andy.
What was the law doing?
The ranger pulled him off me like a pair of whimpering pups. When Jake hollered that he'd had enough, Mr. Pickard offered to let them take me on one at a time. But they both acted like they needed to go somewhere.
Carrie looked to Andy for corroboration.
That's about the size of it.
We beholden.
Lanny could have whooped the whole bunch without help. He eats nothing but beef, like the Lord intended when he gave us cattle. And McIntosh has got chickens running wild all over the place. That's what makes him weak, eating so much chicken.
Harper cut off a square of steak and dipped it in a gob of gravy on his plate.
Yeah, the only trouble with beef is that when it's on the hoof, you got to watch all the time somebody don't steal it. They're always trying.
You accusing the McIntoshes?
I will, when I find proof.
You know, Paul, half the people around here are convinced that we're doing it.
Let them accuse me to my face. There ain't a man in this county that I can't whoop.
That won't convince them. They still remember Vincent Skeen.
Carrie stiffened, staring darkly at her brother across the table. She rose and quickly left the room.
That was the wrong thing to say, son.
Bud looked chagrined.
Just popped out of my mouth. But it's the truth. People ain't got over blaming us for what he did.
Harper grimaced at the memory.
It was an awful sight for your poor sister to see.
Yeah, terrible.
Bud pushed back from the table and went outside, leaving half the food on his plate uneaten. Lanny reached over with a fork and speared a biscuit Bud had taken but hadn't bitten into.
No use letting the last biscuit go to waste.
His father gave him a critical look.
I gotta keep up my strength. No telling when Jake McIntosh may come looking for some more.
If you see he's wearing a gun, you better go way around him. Even Carrie can shoot straighter than you.
Andy found Bud sitting on the barn step, patching a bridle.
You kind of shook up your sister.
Didn't mean to. We tried to keep her from seeing him laying there, shot to hell. But nobody could hold her back. She'd have killed every McIntosh that came in sight that day. But we wouldn't let her have a gun.
Now she's talking about making peace.
She doesn't want to lose anybody else.
Have the McIntoshes ever said anything about the jailhouse killing?
They don't talk about it. Neither do we.
Bud accidentally punched his thumb with the awl.
I never understood how a sensible woman like Carrie got herself wrapped up in a son-of-a-bitch-like scheme. The rest of us saw through him almost from the first.
Lanny told me he beat her.
Just once. She floored him with a chunk of stove wood. Hand me that leather string, would you?
Andy knew the subject was closed. Harper Teal stomped into the bunkhouse. It was still dark.
You boys, get up! You're wasting daylight!
Someone lit a lamp. The cowboys and two of the Teal brothers crawled out from beneath their blankets. Lanny didn't move. His father strode over to Lanny's cot and roughly shook the boy's shoulder.
Come on, we got no room here for layabouts.
Oh, I'm too stiff to move. There ain't a place on my body that don't hurt.
Best thing for that is exercise. If you ain't off of that cot, by the time I get to the door, you'll have no breakfast.
Harper left without looking back. Lanny made two unsuccessful tries to rise to his feet. He sat back on the cot, his face twisted.
What makes Pa so damn mean?
Too bad you can't remember Grandpa. He was worse. They had to be tough to survive in his time. They had no easy life like we've got now.
Easy?
Lanny gingerly pulled a shirt sleeve over a sore arm, then repeated with the other.
There's gotta be a better way to make a living.
But after a good day's work, you go to sleep knowing you've earned your keep.
I've heard other people say that. Usually they're the ones who hire somebody else to do the work for them.
Harper nodded satisfaction upon seeing Lanny take a chair at the table, but he wolfed down his breakfast without comment. Finished, Harper pushed to his feet.
Carrie, you always fix too much coffee. It gives these boys an excuse to dawdle instead of getting out to work.
Harper strode out of the house.
I hope you all set him a pace today that he can't keep up with. Bring him home walking on his knees.
I don't think it can be done. I've never seen a man who can get drunk on hard work like Pa does.
The trouble is, he always wants us to be with him when he does it. Oh.
The men stood up and prepared to leave the table. Daggett turned a fierce gaze upon them.
Ain't you all gonna carry your stuff to the pan so the lady doesn't have to?
Shamed, the men carried their cups, plates, and utensils to the cabinet.
Thank you for breakfast, ma'am.
The other men straggled out toward the barn. Andy pushed his chair back and rose.
Thank you for the breakfast. I'll be getting to town.
Daggett turned to Carrie.
Yeah, I think it's time for me to go, too. Been a real pleasure getting to know you, ma'am.
Are you sure that leg is well enough?
Longer I stay here, the harder it's going to be to leave.
Andy was aware of a regretful look that passed between them. He felt he had witnessed something that should have been private. Daggett handed her the cane he'd been using.
Thanks for letting me have the bari of it.
It'll be here the next time you need it. I don't mean that I want to see you get hurt again.
Next time I see that brindle bull, I'll let Pickard wrestle with him.
Andy and Daggett saddled their horses. Daggett still limped. He struggled to mount up, but Andy knew better than to offer help.
We need a good look at the McIntosh family. I thought we might circle over to their place before we go back to town. While we're there, we can give Jake a talking to.
Yeah, well, what he needs isn't a talk. Smart tap on the head with a barrel of a six-shooter would do him a world of good.
You've been listening to the Teals. I expect the McIntosh to see things different.
It complicates things when you gotta look at both sides. You're not sure who to shoot.
One of the boys told Andy that to find the McIntosh's place, he had only to follow the creek. The Teals settled on the upper part, where the springs brought it to life. The McIntoshes came along later, taking a long stretch of the creek farther downstream. For a while, the ranger saw cattle bearing the Teals' T-Cross brand. Then he began coming across the Bar F for the McIntosh family. After a time, he heard yelling and reined his horse in that direction. He found several men herding cattle into a crude brush corral. Among them, he recognized Jake and his father. The McIntoshes saw Andy and Daggett, but didn't acknowledge them until the cattle were penned and the gate closed. Gray-bearded Ethan McIntosh stared hard at Andy as if trying to remember where he might have seen him before.
I'm Andy Pickard. My partner and I were at the Hawkins' place when you came by.
The old man extended his hand hesitantly, as if he might change his mind and jerk it back.
He's a ranger, Papa. He was at the dance.
Jake had no bandages on his face, but he showed several dark bruises and some abrasions still inflamed. Ethan's eyes narrowed.
Were you one of them that beat my boy up so bad?
No, sir. Lanny Teal did that all by himself.
Just Lanny? That's not quite the way I heard it.
Ethan cast an accusing glance at his son. Jake looked away.
I doubt that it's a mortal sin to improve upon the truth in a modest way. We've all done it. Look, Rangers, we have these weaned calves to brand. If we wait much longer, somebody's likely to maverick them. Somebody like those Teals.
Go on ahead. We didn't come to disrupt your work.
Andy was not one to stand around and watch. He pitched in and helped one of the McIntosh sons to flank calves and hold them down for the branding, earmarking, and cutting. Daggett assumed responsibility for the fire that heated the irons. His sore leg would permit little more.
You appear to have had experience at this. Yeah.
Some?
I think you'd want to forego your ranger job and do something for yourself.
Yeah, my plan is to have cattle of my own when I can buy some more land.
Buy it? There's still vacant state land in the west of here that you could use for nothing. If you don't own it, you don't have to pay taxes on it. You pay only on your own cattle, and only on as many of them as you allow the assessor to see.
The state's selling off land as fast as it can.
Ethan stood up from branding.
It'll never be able to sell land that has no water on it. Besides, out past the Pecos, there's more land than cattle.
Have you ever seen it?
No, but I know it's there. Free for the taking.
Yeah, for good reason. Some of it's so sparse that a cow has to graze in a run.
Have you met old man Harper Teal?
Well, yes, sir.
When Harper begins buying dry land, I will too. If only to prevent that old thief from getting what should be mine.
Andy thought about that.
What makes you think he's a thief?
It's common knowledge. Ask anyone.
That was essentially what Andy had heard from the Teals, except that they were describing the McIntoshes. The two old men had a lot more in common than they knew.
If you have any proof, I'll get out a warrant.
Not yet. But when I get it, I'll shout it from the rooftops. Yep.
The cattle branded and turned out, the McIntoshes mounted their horses and started toward their headquarters. Ethan invited Andy and Daggett to go along. As they rode, the old man pointed out several varieties of grass.
It's strong and puts the pounds on them. Of course, there's brush here that cattle don't eat. I thought it'd be good for goats if there was any market for them.
I've seen some white goats with long, silky hair. Owners shear them like sheep.
I'll look into it one of these days. A man with a family needs to wring every bell he can reach. If he doesn't, someone else will.
In the conversation, Andy found that Ethan's family consisted of a wife, three sons, and a daughter named Patience, and a son-in-law named Barstow, on whom Ethan bragged at length.
He works as hard as any man I know. My daughter had her head on her shoulders when she married him.
If so, Andy thought, Ethan was luckier than Harper Teal had been with his late son-in-law. Riding toward the ranch headquarters, Andy contrived to pull his horse beside Jake's.
How are the battle wounds?
Heart still pumps all right.
I wondered why you keep fighting with Lanny Teal. They say he always beats you.
Why does a man keep getting back on a bronc that throws him off? He hopes to wear him down.
Lanny doesn't really want to fight you.
What business is that of the Rangers?
We were sent here to try and keep things peaceful.
Run the Teals out of the country. That ought to do it.
Funny, they said pretty much the same thing about you all.
The day will come and we'll have to burn them out like a hornet's nest.
Do, and the Rangers will come after you.
Sounds like you've taken sides already.
We haven't. And we won't unless somebody forces us to.
They neared the headquarters.
It's late. You Rangers are welcome to eat supper with us and stay the night.
We'd be obliged.
Ranger protocol would have called for him to defer to Daggett, but the older Ranger might have declined the offer. Andy wanted to spend time with the McIntoshes as well as the Teals and become better acquainted with both families.
In spite of anything Harper Teal may have told you, we have no tails nor horns, nor do we breathe fire. All we ask is to be able to scratch out an honest living and remain in the good graces of the Lord.
Well, that doesn't seem like too much to ask.
Some people won't leave us alone, though. They accuse us of things we never did, more than likely trying to cover their own transgressions. Are we supposed to lie down and let them walk over us?
You're supposed to obey the law.
That we do. You can't blame Jake if he faces off against that Teal boy once in a while. He can't be expected to stand still against Lanny Teal's provocations.
I was at the dance. I didn't see Lanny provoke him.
He knows Jake considers Lucy to be his girl. He took her to the dance to goad Jake into a fight.
Has anybody asked Lucy whose girl she wants to be?
Jake staked his claim. That should be enough to keep everyone else away.
Andy was a bit put off by McIntosh's strong sense of family entitlement.
A woman's not like a piece of land. She's got a mind of her own.
Not a very bright one if she chooses Lanny over Jake. Any McIntosh is worth a dozen Teals.
The McIntosh's headquarters didn't look greatly different from the Teals. Andy saw two frame houses, one newer but smaller than the other. He assumed it was where the daughter and son-in-law lived. A bunkhouse stood halfway between the smaller house and the barn. The corrals were of upright cedar stakes, fitted closely together so no animal larger than a rabbit could work its way through. Chickens scratched around the barn. Farther away, Andy could see a hog pen. It was a more diversified operation than the Teals. Though the creek ran nearby, a windmill stood just behind the larger house, its wheel turning slowly. The sucker rod clanked with each stroke. Ethan swept a wide arc with his calloused hand.
It's nothing fancy like the English dukes and earls who come over here with disgraceful amounts of money. But everything you see was built piece by piece, with our own hands and the sweat of our brows. A hard-working man can do well for himself.
He can if he doesn't have to pay to use the land.
But Andy could foresee an end to that. It would be the end of free-range people like the McIntoshes and the Teals. Changes were overtaking them, whether they acknowledged it or not.
What if somebody buys all this out from under you?
They can't. I've bought the land where the headquarters sits, and the land along the creek. I needn't be concerned about the rest of it. Without water, no one else can use it.
Ethan noticed that Andy was intrigued by the windmill.
It furnishes house water for drinking and cooking. With so many cattle upstream, we don't trust the creek to be clean. It's a marvel how much mud one cow can stir up. Horses are even worse.
Andy saw something more in the mill. Up to now, ranchers who staked their claims on rivers, creeks, and springs could claim by default outlying areas worthless without access to water. This had the effect of choking out latecomers who found no watered land. But in other parts of Texas, Andy had seen a trend toward drilling wells and erecting windmills that could bring up underground water where there was none on the surface. In time, the free-range operator would no longer be able to hold settlers at bay simply because the land was dry. McIntosh's windmill foreshadowed his eventual defeat unless he adapted. The son-in-law loped ahead to open the gate and hold it for the other riders to pass through.
Barstow, when are you going to make uncles of us? You've been married long enough to give her two babies by now.
Embarrassed, Barstow tried to string along.
I'm bashful.
When I want something, I jump right in.
Jake's brother Harvey intervened.
That's how you got those bruises. You jumped in over your head.
I'll whip him next time. You can bet on it.
I'll bet on it. The day I see that red rooster lay eggs.
Jake, you should be ashamed of making crude suggestions about your own sister.
She didn't hear it.
I hope I can keep that boy alive till he's 30. Perhaps by then he'll grow up.
Andy found that the McIntosh cowboys had their own cook, operating in a small kitchen at one end of the bunkhouse. The family members ate in the main house, where Ethan's gray-haired wife ruled over the kitchen with the stern authority of a top sergeant. She was assisted by her married daughter, a short, plump little woman of perhaps 30, whose pleasant smile seemed locked in place. Andy wondered idly if she kept it while she slept. Ethan called his wife Agatha. Like her daughter, she was short in stature, broad in the hips. Unlike her daughter, she did not smile much, but issued a lot of orders.
Jake McIntosh, you'll not eat at my table until you wash your face and hands and comb your hair. We may live in the country, but we do not have to be countrified.
The soap burns and cuts on my face.
All the better. You'll know to keep your hands in your pockets the next time you're tempted to fight.
Andy soon decided he liked these people, just as he had come to like the Teals. He also realized that this was a dilemma in the making. Sooner or later, he might have to act against one of the families, or both. Andy and Daggett left the McIntosh's ranch after breakfast.
Well, Logan, what do you say now that you've seen them all?
I say, damn it.
Logan Daggett sat on a bench in front of the general store, his hurt legs stretched straight. He kept on whittling as Andy walked up.
Where you been?
Around, listening to talk.
Figured out yet who to blame for the trouble?
Some say it's the McIntoshes. Some say it's the Teals.
I could have told you that without talking to anybody.
That's all I've got.
Daggett had been whittling on a scrap piece of pine. It was beginning to take the form of a pistol.
That blacksmith's boy's been following me around. I'm making a little something for him.
This show of generosity took Andy by surprise.
We're here to keep the peace, and you're giving him a gun?
I don't know how to carve a Bible.
Daggett brushed pine shavings from his legs. A small, hungry-looking dog sniffed at them and turned away disappointed.
I haven't seen either one of those two young fighting roosters in town.
I hear the Teals and the McIntoshes have been busy working cattle.
I hope they're working on their own, not somebody else's.
Any reason to think otherwise?
Time I spent with the Teals gave me a chance to look them over. They don't seem like the outlaws some people say they are. Carrie told me their family history.
You think she told you all of it?
It ain't in her to lie.
Andy thought he'd best tread lightly. It occurred to him that Carrie might remind Daggett of his wife from times past. He considered before he asked.
Does she resemble somebody you used to know?
Nope. Not one damn bit.
Andy's attention was turned to a horseman coming up the street. Tall and gaunt, he was dressed in black like a preacher, with blankets and a war bag tied to his saddle. A rifle rested in a scabbard beneath one leg. His coat bulged over a pistol on his hip.
Well, here's one I haven't seen before.
Daggett's face fell.
Oh, hell. You know who that is?
Well, I don't think so.
You've heard of Nelson Rodock, ain't you?
Name's familiar, but I don't recognize the face.
Rodock had a reputation as a lethal troubleshooter who usually brought a quick end to whatever problem he was hired to solve. He managed to stay within the letter, if not the spirit of the law. At least, he managed not to get caught.
He looks like he could walk into the church and preach a sermon.
If he did, it'd be at a funeral.
Maybe he's just passing through.
Mm-mm. He wouldn't travel around for the fun of it. He's here because somebody paid him, or is going to.
He jerked his head.
Come on, back me up.
Daggett limped out to intercept the rider. Andy hastened to join him. Daggett stopped, his right hand resting near his pistol.
Howdy, Rodock. Been a while.
Rodock drew up on the reins and stared with flinty gray eyes. Recognition brought a grim smile, devoid of humor or warmth.
Logan Daggett. I figured somebody sent you to glory years ago.
Yeah, you tried once. I got the scar.
I was having an off day. I'm a better shot now.
So I keep hearing. They say an undertaker's gotten fat just following you around.
My reputation far exceeds my record. I have not killed half as many men as some people believe, and those I have killed deserved it.
You spent a couple of years as a guest of the state for trying to kill me.
The time was not wasted. I learned much while I was there, for which I have you to thank.
The two men stared coldly at each other in the loudest silence Andy had experienced in a long time.
Do you have any business with me here today?
You're not in the fugitive book. But I'd be glad to put you there if you give me any reason.
Oh, I am much more careful than in my younger days. I intend to grow a long gray beard and die in bed.
Rodock gave Andy a quick glance, but it was Daggett who held his attention.
Good day, gentlemen.
Daggett's eyes were squinted as he watched Rodock move on toward the hotel.
Things were touchy enough around here before he showed up. I'd save everybody some trouble if I shot him here and now.
But being a ranger, you can't.
Not in town with people watching. But if we were out in the country with nobody around...
You'd shoot him?
Like a rabid dog. How else do you think a handful of rangers managed in those bad years after the Reconstruction, huh? We couldn't make them fear God, but we could damn sure make them fear us.
Two heavily laden freight wagons lumbered up the street, cutting deep tracks in the dirt. One was loaded with spooled barbed wire, the other piled high with posts.
Here comes some more trouble, like Rodok wasn't enough.
Proprietor Babcock stepped out onto his store's porch. Smiling, he braced his hands on his broad hips while he watched the wagons approach.
It's about time you got here!
The lead teamster pulled his mules to a stop.
Here's your order, Mr. Babcock.
Been expecting you for a couple of days. Where have you been?
Well, you can only get so much out of a mule.
Babcock pointed down the street.
It's too late to start for the Hawkins' place today. Pull over by the wagon yard. You can deliver these goods to him tomorrow.
The sooner we get away from here, the better we'll like it.
Daggett pulled a long strip of bark from a cedar post and gave it a moment's serious study. He tossed it aside.
There'll be blood stains on this wire before Hawkins gets it strung.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the first time. Me and Shorty got shot at over Brown County. We tried to tell them it wasn't our wire. We just haul whatever the public pays us to.
Well, you ought to charge extra just for carrying the stuff.
I do. This is the only hide I've got, and I place a high value on it. If I'm to risk losing a piece of it, I expect to get paid.
You certainly charged enough for this job.
We tried to talk Hawkins out of fencing his land, at least till some of the bigger operators broke the ground.
It's a free country. A man has a right to do what he wants to with his own property.
There's been wars fought over that proposition.
Hawkins has a right to build a fence, and I have a right to sell him the wire and posts. As rangers, it's your responsibility to uphold those rights.
Babcock retreated inside his store. The Teamsters hadn't moved.
So, you two are rangers. Me and Shorty bleed easy. We'd be obliged if you'd stay around close. We'll even buy you both a drink.
Andy turned to Daggett.
Why don't you go with him? I'll watch the wagons and see who all takes an interest.
A great many people did. By ones and twos, they drifted down to the wagon yard once the Teamsters parked their wagons and turned the mules into a corral for a fill of grain. Andy watched Harold Percy and Sonny Vernon walk up. Percy foolishly tested a barb, then jerked his hand back.
Ow!
A tiny bubble of blood rose on the tip of his finger. He tried to suck it away.
I could have told you those barbs are as sharp as the devil's horns.
Percy rubbed a remnant of blood onto his trouser leg.
It was the devil that invented them.
Sonny Vernon looked sideways at Percy.
Harold don't believe nothing till he gives it a try.
What, like jumping on Lanny Teal? Someday you boys will learn there's some things you can't get away with.
The two young men glanced at each other and left. Soon after Percy and Sonny left, Mason Gaines sauntered over to frown over the wire.
I wonder if Hawkins talked to the Teals or the McIntoshes before he ordered this.
I don't see any reason that he has to.
I doubt they'll be happy about it. Once Hawkins gets his fence up, if he does, others will follow his example.
It's a free country.
It's freer if you're big. Hawkins isn't.
Judge Zachary strolled over from the courthouse, chewing on a half-smoked cigar that had lost its fire.
I see that the rumors were correct. I'm afraid this means some unpleasant days ahead.
I don't see any legal way somebody could stop Hawkins from building his fence.
No, but there are illegal ways. They usually end in court. Mind you, I respect August Hawkins, but he is a stubborn man. When he makes up his mind to something, he refuses to consider consequences.
This part of the country seems to have more than a share of stubborn men.
Bud Teal was the first of his family to inspect the wire. Leaning from the saddle, he tested a barb between two fingers without cutting himself.
Wicked! I bet this stuff would even turn that brindle bull.
Well, you haven't caught him yet?
Haven't seen him. Maybe he got tired of our ugly cows.
Bud turned his attention back to the load of wire.
Hawkins is taking a big risk with this.
He wants to save his grass for his sheep. What's wrong with that?
Only that he's starting something a lot of people won't like.
Your family, for instance?
Lots of families.
Bud reined his horse around.
I'll need to be telling Pa about this. I don't think he'll take kindly to it.
Jake McIntosh showed up an hour later with his father, Ethan. Jake's expression revealed nothing about his feelings. Perhaps he had none, one way or the other. Ethan was blunt, however. He clenched his fists.
Satan's tool it is.
Any place that wire touches, the land is poisoned forever.
Andy had heard the same charge against steel plow points.
It's Hawkins' own land.
But this could spread like smallpox. The best thing is to stop the contagion before it starts.
How'd you figure on doing that, Mr. McIntosh?
Even a hard-headed sheepman can be persuaded.
You best not go against the law. It'd be our job to stop you.
Ethan's face twisted with indignation.
You? Who've broken bread with us at our table?
I'd hope to break bread with you again. But we have to enforce the law. We have to protect people's property rights.
Face flushed, Ethan turned away.
Come on, son. We're leaving.
Jake lingered a little. He kept looking at the wire, but his mind was on something else.
Seen Lanny Teal in town lately?
Not since he got waylaid on his way home from the dance.
You can believe me or not, but I had no hand in that. After the fight at the dance, I was too stove up to tangle with Lanny again.
I'd like to believe you.
There's been too many lies told about us McIntoshes. I'd like to move someplace where nobody ever heard of us. I'd change my name to Smith or Jones or something.
Orphaned by Indians when he was a boy, Andy was sensitive to the importance of blood kin.
Man should never turn his back on family.
I'm proud of my family, but I hate the reputation some folks have stuck us with. We're God-fearing people.
Seems to me that the Teals are, too.
They'd like you to think so. Wouldn't surprise me none if they put Hawkins up to this.
Andy knew better, but it would be futile to argue the point with Jake. The jail cell cot seemed harder than ever tonight. Dozing fitfully, Andy kept turning, trying to find a soft spot. There wasn't one to be found. Sleeping in the jail saved money and provided a roof for shelter, but he hadn't seen a drop of rain since he'd been here.
Shelter be damned. From now on, I'm sleeping on a cot at the wagon yard.
He was startled fully awake by the clanging of a church bell. A bell in the middle of the night was not a call to services. He grabbed for his hat and then his trousers and boots. Still buttoning his shirt, he burst through the jail door and broke into a run. Men ran to a huge blaze near the wagon yard. Panicked horses and mules squealed and raced in circles inside the corrals. The wagon load of fence posts was enveloped in flames. One of the teamsters futilely dipped water from a trough and threw it on the fire, a bucketful at a time. His efforts made no showing against the blaze.
Hey!
Rapidly losing ground, he gave up and stood back disconsolately to watch his wagon and its cargo go up in smoke.
Come on, men! Give me a hand! Don't let the flames get started on the buildings!
Stable owner Scanlon ran excitedly back and forth. Townsmen threw water on the wooden fence to prevent its loss. Others raked loose hay away from the blaze lest it catch fire and take the barn with it. The teamster slapped at smoldering black spots on his shirt. He recognized Andy.
Kinda late chilling up, ain't ya?
Well, I wasn't expecting this.
Daggett was slower getting to the scene, but he still limped, despite claiming that his injury had healed. He held silent. At this point, there seemed to be nothing to say. Unlike many others, Deputy Salty Willis was fully dressed. He'd probably not bothered to take his clothes off when he went to sleep. He picked up a large metal container at the fence and brought it to the Rangers.
Smells like coal oil!
Yeah, it tells us how they did it. Doesn't tell us who they were.
I smell the McIntoshes behind this.
Why the McIntoshes? There's lots of free-range people that wouldn't be happy about Hawkins' fence. What about the Teals?
Just the same. I bet my money on the McIntosh.
Don't you think you're making too fast a judgment?
Experience has taught me to play my first punch. It generally proves out.
Sheriff Seymour came up in a trot, his shirt and trousers not yet buttoned. His boots were on the wrong feet.
Well, they didn't wait long.
Any suspicions?
I suspicion just about everybody but the Golden Infirm, and even some of them.
Storekeeper Babcock was trailed by his daughter. He quickly sent her home when he saw that some of the men had run to the fire in their underwear.
Lucy, get on home. You shouldn't be looking at this.
What about my wagon? Who's responsible for that?
Not me. You were paid to haul the goods, that's all. The wagon is yours.
Was. Andy was mildly irritated by the merchant's quick evasion of responsibility. The wagon and its load slumped into a smoky, smoldering heap, sending up a massive shower of sparks. The wheels lay flat on the ground. The teamster glared at Babcock.
Nobody's paid me for the haul yet.
You didn't complete it. You were supposed to deliver all the way out to the Hawkins' place.
For a minute, it appeared that the Rangers might have to break up a fight, but Babcock stopped the argument by briskly walking away.
Maybe you can sue whoever lit the fire. That's if we're ever able to find out who it was.
Tracks would be of no help. Too many people added their own hurrying to the fire, trying to fight it. Nor was the oil can likely to yield any information. Most people kept coal oil to fill lamps and lanterns and to light stoves and fireplaces.
Looks to me like we're up a stump.
Daggett shook his head.
We'll keep an eye on the Macintoshes. Sooner or later, one of them will make a wrong step.
She sure took a hold of you, didn't she?
She? Who you talking about?
Forget I said it.
Carrie's got nothing to do with it. I'm suspicioning the Macintoshes all along.
Better get to know more about the lay of the land before we make up our minds. First guess is wrong. Often is not.
Yours, maybe. Not mine.
Newspaper editor Tolliver was talking to the Teamsters and making notes on a pad lighted by the flames. Daggett poked Andy with his elbow, jerked his head toward a man who stood alone, watching the fire with no evident emotion. Andy recognized Rodok.
You reckon?
I wouldn't be surprised.
There was no question of going back to sleep. Andy studied faces, especially those of people who seemed pleased by the conflagration. As daylight came, he found that some of the wooden spools that contained the wire were scorched. Whoever burned the posts made an attempt against the wire as well, but the flames had consumed the coal oil, then died out. The freighter and his helper hitched a team to the remaining wagon.
Oh, I'm getting this load of wire off my hands as quick as I can. Which way is to Hawkins' place?
Andy looked at Daggett.
Might be a good idea if we went with him. He could run into trouble.
He's already had trouble. You go. I'll stay around town. If Rodok as much as wiggles a finger, I want to see it.
Andy had breakfast, then went to the wagon yard. The freighters had already left. It didn't take long to catch up to them on the road, but the wagon and its load were too heavy to make much speed.
You were in a hurry.
It don't take me long to see when I'm not welcome. From now on, I'm hauling nothing but dry goods and groceries.
Fences are coming, like it or not.